Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour. Before we bring on tonight's guest on this January the 21st, 2009, or if you're on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone, you know it's already January 22nd. We will discuss tonight a little bit about the events that went on yesterday. I did not watch the inauguration. In fact, last night, if you tried to call into the show, we basically ran a recording with Dr. Richard Souder straight through. We had to, because of scheduling conflicts, record that show last week, which I seldom, if ever, do. But the show was well received. A lot of people really enjoyed it, and he's going to be back to talk about these underground bases and tunnels and black ops projects. The man is a walking encyclopedia. And I appreciate all the nice compliments everybody brought forth regarding his appearance in that interview. Dr. Souder said it was a lot of fun, and it is very enlightening. I don't know personally that it's fun. I think for him to be able to discuss this and share that information is a blessing. He's tried to get on some major shows, and of course, it's a very sensitive topic, and they don't want it on the mainstream. That's the beauty of what we do here on Evident Footprints, and we have BBS Radio to thank for allowing us to bring the truth out. No matter how much it hurts or how much we have to extricate ourselves from the grid. Now, this event that went on last night, this inauguration, in my estimation, was nothing more than a continuation of the fraud that we've been experiencing for over the last 100 years, and certainly it's culminated into something very serious. And I spent my time doing research. I was listening to the show with both ears, and at the same, and it's kind of interesting hearing myself on the radio live, or what feels like live on the radio, while I'm researching a different topic. And I can tell you that Dr. K, who was on my show this past Monday and Tuesday, will be coming back soon, and he and I are working on some groundbreaking research that's really going to be exposing a lot more truth than what we feel we've brought forth so far. So you're going to be on the edge of your seats when you hear and see what we're discovering. That said, I want to encourage everybody to keep tuning into the show. Tell your friends about us. Our audience is growing. I can see it by the people who are responding to the message, and I'm hearing that there are people all over the world listening to the show right now, and they're watching us very closely to see what we're going to do. They're also praying for us, and they're also wishing us well in coming to a realization of who we really are. With that, I want to bring my good friend, who is a journalist. He's somewhat of a biblical scholar, I must say. He's a talk show host. He has his own radio show on RBN. In fact, I was just on his show the past hour, and we hopped over to BBS, and he came along for the ride. We did that. This is actually kind of fun to do this, because we get to spend a couple of hours discussing some very serious topics, and we do get to speak to people. Also, if you have questions or comments for us about the topics that we're going to discuss, you know the numbers on the BBS index page. and we may entertain some calls tonight. With that, I would like to bring the host of Road Warrior Radio, and also he's got a couple of websites that are really great research sites, and he's a journalist, and he's going to be part of a new show that we're putting together for BBS Radio. It's going to be news-related, and it's going to really be the news that you're not getting anywhere else, and we're excited about that. So with that, I'd like to bring my good friend, Mr. Chris Hinckley. Welcome to Evident Footprints, Chris.
Thanks, Don.
My mind and my tongue are operating at different speeds right now, so I apologize.
Hey, I brought the show on earlier doing, you know, my apology for yesterday, because as you know, basically I, as I said earlier, I was opening my mouth to change feet yesterday, so I, you know, no one does that or knows how that works more than I.
Well, we know that at Evident Footprints. We know all about feet. So
you just don't want them around your mouth most of the time.
No.
Yeah.
No. Well, it's nice to have you back. And
Thank you.
I'm appreciative of being having been able to be on your show. I want to just mention one thing so that our listening audience can catch up on this, because I didn't get a chance to bring this out yesterday because we had previously recorded Dr. Sauber's show. This false flag event that we had talked about certainly got a few people scared, and that's not what we're trying to do. We're not fear-mongering, okay? I had read an email from Mark, and I can only refer to him as such, and I got sort of a clarification on his intention. But what was great about my rant, nonetheless, Mark sparked a rant in me, and that spirit takes over, and I said some very meaningful, heartfelt things about people's unwillingness to really look at reality the way it is and stop playing this game that they want us to play. And I got a huge response from a lot of people, and some great ideas came forth which are going to empower us. So my rant served a purpose. Mark and I have come to an understanding about his intention, And so, with that clarification, we're moving on. Now, this false flag event that I talked about, and this was a serious issue because I wrestled with whether or not I should bring this out. It's a pretty important thing. And imagine you having to make that decision. How would you do it? Who would you talk to? How would you go about it? What is an advantage to me is that I have a website. I'm a journalist. I have a talk show on internet radio, and so I do have a means of getting this message out. However, the whole world's not listening to me. I wonder sometimes how many people are actually really listening, and I'm not a fearmonger. I talk about things that people have been afraid of, and we talk about solutions, and I'm hearing from you, the listeners, that this has been helpful, that you're hearing the truth, you're able to accept some of the things that you're hearing, and you're doing some research, and you're moving into the place where you're beginning to understand what you're afraid of. And when you understand it, the fear goes away. It evaporates in the wind. And so I'm appreciative of the folks that are not getting scared and are not feeling like I'm trying to scare you. If it happens, you think the message is scary? If it should happen, You have no idea, if you survive, what kind of fear you will experience. And the idea is to understand that this is being done to us purposely, intentionally, that there are some very evil forces in this world, and this is a battle between principalities and powers. This is a spiritual battle, ultimately. They've got us focused on the physical. You've heard me talk about this for now 2 months and 3 weeks, almost 3 months. We've been talking about solutions and the recognition of who we really are, our individuality, our sovereignty. These happen to be rights given to us in the Constitution. These are rights as America was founded as a republic. And we're going to talk a little bit about the misconceptions about what America is with tonight's guest. And we have a surprise guest waiting in the wings also, who is actually much more qualified to talk about this than me, although the essence of our message is the same. And it's about us being sovereign individuals having been created by God to experience life and peace and happiness and abundance. And that doesn't necessarily mean prosperity in a financial sense. I'm speaking about abundance, abundant health, abundant peace, abundant love, abundant light. And we have the opposite of that being shoved down our throats 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So with that, I welcome to Evident Footprints, Mr. Chris Hinckley, again.
Yeah, that was great. That's the end of the show, right? That's a great note to end on. I mean, that's
no,
it, man.
We're opening from there.
Yeah. Hey, that's, you know, I was just, earlier in the research that I was doing, actually until about an hour up to the show, I was looking in the Idaho Code 49, Title 49, which is the motor vehicle code, and right in the code, what is it? I forget. It's 49-301. One of the judicial rulings from one of the cases is, although Idaho provided that the right to travel and the right to operate a motor vehicle on the public highways were constitutional rights, the judge goes on to say that in this particular case, State versus Wilder, the Department of Licensing requiring an applicant to provide a social security number was not unconstitutional. Until recently, I would have looked at that and went, what in the world does that mean? I don't understand. But like we were talking about earlier, and I'm saying this because I was thinking about this as you were saying what you're saying in the run-up, it gets right to the heart of that discussion, you know, basically unveiling, like you said, this freedom and this abundance that this country was supposed to, the ideals that this country was supposed to be founded on, and the things that we are mistakenly led to believe, there is a duality in the system that we recognize as our government that we are unaware of.
As I recall, Chris, it's a state driver's license, is it not?
Correct.
Okay, now they use the social security number is an identifying number unique to each individual, and it has nothing to do with driving.
As you pointed out, a unique identifying number, which was never supposedly intended to be an identifier at all, as it says on the card, as you pointed out.
Yes, it's not to be used as identification. Yet,
however,
they're requiring it for identification.
Yeah. However, something has gone horribly awry here. Something is not as it seems. And the trouble I think we've had for a long time is, you know, like I was saying earlier, the consternation is we are led to believe the system of government that we have in this country, the United States of America, is basically one system. Under the Constitution, the three duly constituted branches that we're all familiar with and are aware of from school, for example, the legislative, executive, and judicial. However, there is that fourth branch that Congress admitted to creating back in 1946 in the run-up to the passage of the Administrative Procedure Act that Senator McCarran even quoted from a 1937 President's Committee on Administrative Management report that said that these independent agencies that we still have today, obviously there are many, many, many more of them now, but that they were a headless fourth branch of government. This was published in 1937, and Senator McCarran quoted that in the 1946 Congressional Record, and he said, "We have created a fourth dimension, if I may so term it, which is now referred to as administrative in nature." And he said, basically, and I'm jumping ahead, but he said, you know, so we have the executive, the legislative, judicial, and the administrative, the fourth branch of government. The point is, that fourth branch, what we don't realize, has its own set of rules. It's a completely different ball game. And so we've all been suiting up to play one game, and not only is it not the right field, it's not even the right game. Well, completely different set of rules.
Man can only serve one master. Can't serve two masters, because he'll love one and hate the other. So which one do we love and which one do we hate?
Which is a great point. The prize guest that you alluded to does a great job of pointing out that this double-mindedness is what keeps everyone guessing. It's the curse. It's almost like these people have set up a system, not almost like, it's a fact. They set up the system that exploits kind of an anti-biblical system. And what I mean is, they know, for example, that duplicity and that double-mindedness is basically a curse to the common man, so to speak, that doesn't know about it or isn't aware of it. And so we have this system that we're told is one, but what we really have, in truth, is you have a constitution, and yet in that constitution, through Article 1, Section 8, and Article 1, Section 10, Congress, Article 1, Section 8, Congress can create these administrative agencies. Article 1, Section 10 says that you have the ability basically to contract in it. Article 1, Section 10 says that you have the ability to contract outside the Constitution privately. You put those two together, and you have an administrative corporation, which is called the United States District of the United States Municipal Corporation District of Columbia, a democracy. It is a corporation with 10,170 interlocking for-profit subcorporations that we call government. Mm-hmm. If you know people want to look on Dun & Bradstreet, the website, they can see for themselves that everything that we call government, your state, your county, your city, has a corresponding corporate entity. They're all for-profit corporations. You just go to DNB, the letters, D, David, Nancy, B for Bradstreet, -credit.com/public. And right there you will have a list on Dun & Bradstreet, the comprehensive corporate directory of everything we call government. It's for-profit corporations.
Mm-hmm. You know what you remind me of here, Chris? In my research, and I talk about this in my Obama piece, my Obama piece, it's actually McCain and Obama, the Three Stooges Go to Washington, Part 3, I go into the issue of the Virginia Company and the little-known New England Company and the King George sending Daniel Payser and George Payser. Now, Daniel Payser would have been Louis the Prince in line to the throne, and George Payser was the French paymaster, and he became George Bayshore, invested money into the Virginia Company, started the railroads. Daniel Payser was heading the New England Company. And all these corporations, these huge corporations like the railroads, U.S. Steel, Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, AT&T, Boeing, Ford Motor Company, General Motors, all of these are under that same umbrella, believe it or not.
I was going to ask when you started down that road if you were going to tell the railroad story, because I still remember when you told that on my show, and it's a fascinating story.
Well, I could, but I don't want to eat up all the time here.
Right.
Let it suffice to say that many of the major corporations were hidden. They were actually hidden under a gold company. Okay? And very few people know about that. So yeah. these deals were worked out that they get 50% of all of the mineral rights that we have, or the profits that we get from mineral rights. And then in addition to that, they get something like 5% of our retail profits. This is money automatically still being sent to England and whatever deals they've worked out that we don't know about. But this, mm-hmm. these laws or these agreements have been in force all this time. This is why it's not changing. This is why in the 68 square miles of Washington, D.C., everyone working there is are actually employees under that contract.
Exactly.
Or those two contracts, really.
Okay. Yeah, this is an interesting story that just, man, it's like, you know, there's no end to the layers.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. You know, the railroad story was fascinating. I'll plug my show and say go back into the archives on republicbroadcasting.org.
Yeah,
I don't remember the date, but, you know, yeah, I don't remember the date when you did that. But, man, it's a fascinating story, and I guarantee you, as you know, just saying it for the audience, you won't find that story anywhere else.
Yeah, you know, if we go into that, it'll take up the rest of the show.
I know. You could put it together, but it would take you, I would say, 12 to 18 different, completely unrelated areas of research, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But you did it one show, and it was fascinating. So, anyway.
Okay, well, we'll see if we can dig up that date, and then I'll share that with the listening audience tomorrow night or, you know, before the end of the week. How's that?
Yeah, I was fascinated. It was very interesting. Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, with that, shall we bring our surprise guest on?
Definitely.
Okay, this gentleman, I just met this evening, in fact, while we were off air, during a commercial break, but I've listened to him for several nights now. It seems like the past week or so you've had him on your show on RBN. And I've heard some very revealing and very logical, sensible discussions about this issue of administrative law and how it really affects us. So we're going to talk about this because it's important to know who we are as spiritual beings and who we are as God created us and what our power is. And it's kind of interesting that our Constitution of the Republic of the United States, as it was created, actually has these safeguards built in, and yet we're going to talk about an aspect which Chris and I were just alluding to that really changes the game. And it's why we have the problems we have today, not to mention the corruption that we've talked about so much. So with that, I want to invite for the first time to Evident Footprints our first surprise guest, actually, Mr. Greg Papp. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don, very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Does anything we're saying make any sense to you from what you know?
Absolutely. Yes. Chris and I have had many conversations at length and actually been sharing some research. And you're absolutely right. What you just said when you were introducing me about the United States founders creating a country that was, I think it was Franklin who was asked, what kind of a government have you given us? And Chris knows these quotes better than I do. I'm not the quote guy, but, you know, it's a republic if you can keep it. And then the quote he said earlier, I think we've got another one from Adams also, that demonstrates that the men that created this system, as Chris also said, I think it was, I don't know if it was on this discussion or earlier, about Novus Ordo Seclorum from the dollar bill that we've all been led to believe is a conspiratorial phrase, yet, as Chris pointed out, is a phrase describing the founders' disdain of the divine right of kings and the nonsense there.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I don't think we've brought this out yet, but there's a conflict even within the Bible that ministers and translators have put upon us on purpose, and I'm not going to go into that tonight, but it's in Romans chapter 13, verses 1, 2, 3, and 4, I think it is. And
mm-hmm.
How the word there that is translated power and often translated authorities or authority, powers, power and powers and authorities, you know, really should have been translated freedom of choice or liberty, because it's not the word didymus, which you generally get the word dynamite from, or which would then be translated power. So it, literally, the men with the translations have been playing games with us since King James edition in 1604 when it was commissioned, and the first editions rolled off the press in 1611. Our minds have been played with. But the beauty of this country, Don and Chris, is that the men that founded this thing were beyond genius. I don't even know how to describe this. They had such a knowledge of all the great philosophers of the ancient world, which we don't, and they knew exactly what this religious divine right of kings that had been shoved down the world's throat meant. And I really want to sing the praises of men like Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and George Washington and Patrick Henry. And these men did something quite remarkable in establishing this republic.
Mm-hmm. Now, this may be tongue-in-cheek, but you think Thomas Jefferson might be related to Barack Obama somehow? I mean, that's about that's got to come out pretty soon.
Of course, I think you brought it out. I caught part of your discussion on Monday night, and I think, or maybe much of your discussion on Monday night, that Barack Obama, we don't even know who this guy is. I mean, there's a very good likelihood. Let's put it this way. If there's a bloodline, there's no spiritual and philosophical line. I'll tell you that much. That Thomas Jefferson, I think, is one of the most unique men in all of history.
Yes, I'm not mocking Thomas Jefferson. I was just alluding to the fact that they did find that there was one of his slaves had actually given birth to a son, and or let's say a child. I can't recall right now if it's a son or a daughter, one or the other. with this nonsense that's going on about the bloodlines and this fraud. Let me ask you something in regard, if I can, and I don't want to pull you off topic because I think it applies to the topic in a very pertinent way. This fraud that's been perpetrated on the United States, even though there are a lot of people that really like Barack Obama, I'm not going to say that that's not the case. They're not aware of how that occurred. Number one, how can so many people fall in love with somebody bringing a message? And this person's message is masquerading behind a facade, a charade, felonious documents being presented as genuine, all across the board. The whole family is a fiction, and I'm going to prove even the photos are fictions now. I'm doing some work with Dr. Kasim Khalil also in that regard, and he agrees, and everyone else who's seen our research so far is agreeing with us that they're scrambling now to try to debunk my research. Can't do it, okay? I didn't submit the bogus documents. They did. We really should be having a constitutional crisis right now because they have just improperly sworn in a commander-in-chief who's no one knows where he's from, and certainly he doesn't know. How does that fit into this whole aspect of administrative law? Because now we've got somebody actually abiding to those agreements, and it is flagrantly violating the Constitution.
Okay, I have a boy. This is wonderful. I wanted to get to this in the last segment, so I'm really happy that you brought this out. First off, I would like to say that this is my opinion now. I don't want to start a revolution over what I'm about ready to say, okay? So,
yes.
But hopefully it'll start a revolution of thought. I don't believe in my own studies that we've had a president of the United States of America since Abraham Lincoln. I don't believe that the Republic has existed. Now, I don't want to run into my theory real at length, but I do believe we've been through a series of 70-year bankruptcies because of the original default on the loan that Benjamin Franklin borrowed from the then King of France in 1778 to the tune of 18 million livres to be paid back in 10 years plus 5% interest, which the United States of America defaulted on in 1789. Now, that bankruptcy would have then run from 1789 to 1859, which is obviously the predecessor of the secessionist movement from the South and the beginning of the Civil War right after that. And then I believe the next 70-year cycle might have had a 10-year delay. I'm not sure, but it appears to have run from at least officially would have run from 1859 to 1929, which gave us the stock market crash when gold was required. And then again in 1999, and each of these cycles ended badly in a war. The Civil War for the first ending of the cycle, the World War II with a slight delay as the Depression got going for the second cycle, and now a possibility of World War III if you were to use Chris's research on Pike to Mussini about these three wars. Now, so basically getting to Barack Obama specifically, I did not watch the live swearing in and any of those events. I watched some recordings of it last night. I don't believe I heard anybody other than Barack Obama in his little speech at the end use the phrase United States of America. So this is what I believe. This is my opinion. Barack Obama is the president of the United States Corporation, which was created in the 1860s and was chartered in its charter where it states that employees of the corporation are known as United States citizens. And so when you check a box on a voter application or something or anything that says, are you a United States citizen or a citizen of the United States, you're literally saying that you're an employee of the municipal corporation, District of Columbia, a democracy, or the United States Corporation. So what George Bush was, and Bill Clinton before him, and George Herbert Walker Bush, and Ronald Reagan, and going back to Carter, and Ford, and Nixon, and all the way back, we've had just a series of men who have been the presidents of a corporation. And when they give their State of the Union address, they're nothing more than before their board of directors. And, of course, the largest aspect of that corporation is weapons system, U.S. arms. So my belief, and I wish somebody in the military would be listening to this right now, and especially those at the Navy, because you would see that the Constitution allows for one force to protect the people, and that's the United States of American Navy, not the United States Navy. And of course, the Marine Corps would have outgrowth from that. But I believe that Barack Obama is simply the president of the United States, a corporation, and under the Administrative Procedures Act, the president of the United States is literally just the chief executive officer, and the vice president is the assistant chief executive officer, and your cabinet is really your board of directors, and really you have a lot. In essence, you can say you have your constituency of the directors of the corporation would be your House of Representatives and your Senate and your Supreme Court and the chairman and the Joint Chiefs of Staff would all make that up, and that's why they're the only ones there when you have the January discussion. So anyway, I think that Barack Obama's, and this is going to sound really awful, but I think that the reason they were able to bring up Barack Obama, this creative entity, this Manchurian candidate or whatever, this cloned, I don't know what this guy is, whatever he is, he's perfect for their position as the head of a corporation known as the United States of America, and it's a political organization that, as Chris pointed out, that we were brought into after 1933 and codified in the Erie Railroad versus Tompkins case of 1938, when they abrogated an 1842 case by Chief Justice Story, which said that there was a federal common law to settle disputes between the states. And, of course, the 1938 Erie Railroad case says that there is no federal common law, but that's predicated on the fact that the man that brought the case had not rebutted the fact that in 1933 he'd been brought into the democracy when everybody turned in their gold. So since everybody turned in their gold, at least 70-80%, I believe, turned in their gold voluntarily, in 1933, that was when we lost our law. That's when the Republic went into hibernation, or as Chris said, is being overlaid by this democracy known as the municipal corporation, the District of Columbia, democracy, and I like to throw in the word administrative democracy, and then all of the franchises, which would not only include the government agencies that Chris addressed, but would include every state corporation, including the franchise tax boards of each state, and then the county governments and the municipalities. And so to basically sum this part up, I believe that all of us have been victimized by this presumption. Thanks, Chris. This presumption that when we walk into court as to why it is, when I've been in court, somebody says I want my constitutional rights, and the judge will say there'll be no constitution in here. That's because that judge is just an administrator. And he's not even an administrative law clerk, as one of my friends tries to point out. He's just an administrator and the clerk in that courtroom is really the court. And if we were to liken this to a tennis match, the attorneys are the players on the court, the mm-hmm. judge is the referee,
and we're the audience.
Well, we're the fans. We're the ball. We're the tennis ball. The tennis ball.
And the ball boys, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Can I make a comment here? You know what comes to mind as I'm listening to this?
Yeah.
And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. That comes to mind. It seems to me that our republic does not have a president, do we?
Right, that's right, because nobody, in essence, until now, is even talking about repatriating back to the republic, right? We don't have a president, which might be a blessing in disguise right now, because we'd mm-hmm. probably be getting one just like, you know, the one we had or the one we've got, or the ones we had in the past. Mm-hmm. We're not, I mean, where's Thomas Jefferson? I mean, to have a Jefferson who basically got attacked from the moment he became president anyways, from the elite bankers of New York and went into his own conflicts with the Supreme Court under his administration. And, of course, that's led to believe that he was wrong. And, of course, we know Jefferson was right. But, we don't have a president. But the bottom line is we still have a republic. And the republic mm-hmm. is still there. And let me tell you why we have a republic. And let me say this. You know, hopefully your show tonight is being heard all over the world. Because I want to announce something to everybody on the entire planet. The entire planet has a republic. Because what Thomas Jefferson said, and I'm not going to quote Jefferson because Chris knows Jefferson backwards and forwards, and I'm not going to presume or pretend that I know his quotes word for word, but Jefferson used in the Declaration of Independence the concept of nature and nature's God. Because he knew that if he used religious terms, religion would take it over and we would lose whatever short period of time of freedom that we would have immediately. So he wrote it and he set up a system that we would not operate under the Roman civil law, which is private municipal law, which, of course, the democracy operates under.
Mm-hmm.
But he set up a system that was acknowledging that our rights are derived from the Creator. And that is not just true for those that are between the Canada and Mexico borders and the Pacific and Atlantic Ocean. That's true for every man, woman, and child on the entire planet. And that's what I learned years ago when I was introduced to the secret societies and I was brought in as a quote-unquote family member or whatever you call it. I never joined, but I happened to be around it. And I saw the evil intention of the people that ran this thing and how they mm-hmm. thought they could control the world forever, disregarding the fact that the creator of the universe is a spirit, and that spirit indwells men, and that spirit drives men like a Thomas Jefferson and men like us to reveal the truth, not only for ourselves. You know, this is not just an ego-driven thing. This is a thing to help free those of mankind that want to wake up. And so I believe what Jefferson did and those men did was create the framework for the entire planet to be free from this organized crime syndicate run through Freemasonry, run through the Zionist model, through the Jesuit model, you name it. All religions are involved with this.
Skull and bones. Yeah.
I was at parties where the guys that are supposed to be enemies were all partying together and joking about the same thing. Isn't it funny that all the people that follow us are bound to our control? We control everybody. And there's like this little club, you know, you had Aleister Crowley, you know, as a 95th degree, and then you had the X degree, whatever that is, whatever that final degree is in the letters that are in the book Occult Theocracy, which is, I think you can find that at George Gabrick, or I think Jordan Maxwell has it on his website. Anyways, that book, you know, these guys think that they have absolute power. What they don't understand, what they don't realize, is that the creator of the universe worked through a Thomas Jefferson who literally brought freedom to the planet. And I think it was Tsar Nicholas II, I think it was after the 1911 Bolshevik attempt to overthrow his government, that he created a constitution and Bill of Rights exactly, and I can't prove this, I've never really fully investigated this, but that he created a document like our original de jure instrument, and then gave away 85% of the land of Russia, which is a huge continent, virtually. And,
yeah.
And then, of course, then the banker powers out of the Rothschild Empire set out to destroy the man and ultimately set up the Bolshevik Revolution success in 1917 after they nearly destroyed his army in World War I. So I think that our freedom those, they can't get rid of it. Even if they were to pass laws to get rid of it, Jefferson's concept in the Declaration of Independence and preserved in the Bill of Rights is now a universal document. So while the other side says that they've declared their New World Order, which in essence is the Old World Order of slavery under the divine right of kings, the New World Order that Jesus Christ established back in 30 A.D., between 27 and 30 A.D., is still valid. In fact, I can even show you the scriptures that support this, but if you go to Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 and 2, for example, it lays out the Old World Order, which is slavery under the divine right of kings, which says, in various ways and many times of old, God having spoken to the fathers by the prophets. But that, in essence, by itself doesn't say slavery, but that's an old order. And the new order is in verse 2. He says, in these last days he spoke to us in the Son, in whom he appointed heir of all, in whom he indeed created the ages. And so I believe that Jefferson was like a harbinger of an age change, which we're entering into now. And we're being offered from the Creator an opportunity to introduce to the world the freedom that I believe that Jesus Christ came to bring us 2,000 years ago, and we're now being gifted with the opportunity to introduce it and literally bring out instruments that were created over 200 years ago now, and to literally demonstrate to the world a codification in man's written line of wording, the codification of a Christ summed up, which was love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, love your neighbor as yourself. And then he said, then he summed up the third part. He said in Matthew's Gospel, he said, you've heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemies. I give you a new commandment, love your enemies. And then I think it's in Matthew chapter 7, in the Sermon on the Mount, he says, in essence, do unto others as you have them do unto you. And he says, enter by the narrow gate, for broad is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and many are they who find it. But enter through the narrow gate on the narrow way that leads to life, and few are those who find it. So I don't know if we're going to introduce this to the world and the whole world's going to come around, but I think we're going to start a movement where many people are going to choose to get on that narrow way, take that narrow path, and then expatriate out of the democracies, which I think have taken over the entire planet, and allow us to repatriate under the authority of the sovereign creator of the universe, and see our connection with each other, and literally transform this planet by experiencing, starting here in this country, the United States of America, which again has been lost for a while. But we're bringing it back, and then establish that to live in love. And Don and Chris, I think what this does, it eliminates the banking cartels. It eliminates the greed that we've seen that's exploded over the last many years. Mm-hmm. You know, the people that can't pay their mortgages, and we're maybe at the beginning of what I guess one guy coined a word in a book back in '84 called the crest of a wave. But this is not some kind of a fake religious wave. This is a wave of transformation of freedom.
And yes, I'm glad you brought all this up. If I can comment and solicit some remarks from Chris on this.
Please.
We're speaking about the descendants of Cain who murdered his brother Abel.
Yes.
Okay. The Cainites are the people who are causing all this chaos all over the earth. This repression, this slavery, and we've talked ad nauseum about every aspect of what that is, from the poisoning of our water, foods, our environment, and the technologies that are being used against us, the propaganda, the brainwashing, the pharmaceuticals, the games that they're playing with energy resources, the destruction of nature, the destruction of the planet, the intentional destruction.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about a specific group of people that is masquerading as someone else. Would you like to comment on that, Chris? In light of what Greg just said, and that was absolutely brilliant, Greg.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I was just sitting here listening to you guys. Actually, I was thinking, man, I don't smoke, but I might need a cigarette after this. But
was it that long?
No, it was that good. But
did we play your favorite song in the background?
pretty much. But seriously, the one thing I wanted to back up on that I think is great, you know, when Greg makes the point that he makes from Matthew 7, I wanted to back up real quick. Because I think this is an exciting point. I think what Greg is, doing and bringing out, I think what you're doing, Don, and some other people are doing is exactly this. Greg, you mentioned Matthew 7, 13, and 14. Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction, and there are many who enter through it. It's actually not many who find it, but many who enter through it. And then the next verse is, for the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find it, or few there be that find it. So you actually have to find the narrow way. But the broad way is just all around you. You know, many enter through it, but few there be that find the narrow way. I think the distinction is important, because I see around me, I don't know, a number of people, I guess a striking number of people who are finding this narrow way, which is very encouraging. And, you know, that was part of the thing that was so exciting to me in listening to both of you guys. So to me, that I wanted to at least preface any additional remarks that I made on that idea, you know, that what's most exciting to me is seeing people finding that narrow way, which is really exciting. I think it's really, you know, with that heart for God in there, that is so, it's kind of a humble, and well, it goes with the, you know, the verse right before it, the what we call the golden rule. In everything, therefore, treat people the same way you want them to treat you, for this is the law and the prophets. In other words, as James said it in James 2:8, it's the royal law, mm-hmm. or the golden rule. It's that kind of a heart that I see in, you know, in this research. It's not the agitator's heart of you know, the spirit of get them and antagonism or anything like that. Hey, listen, we just want to get to the bottom of this nonsense. And Greg and I were talking about it earlier. If I can go off on a tangent real quick before I get into the other remarks, I do mean to address that question. But we were talking about the Declaration of Independence, for example. And, you know, why maybe we didn't send off you know, a group of assassins, for example, mercenaries or contractors, if you will, to take care of the King George problem, King George III. And I believe it's the same spirit that I'm talking about right now, indwelling the same people are finding the narrow way that the founders were indwelt by, in the sense that basically, you know, when Greg and I talk about this stuff that we're exploring, in the fraud that's been perpetrated on us with this duality of federalisms, if you will. Mm-hmm. The way I would explain it is, you know, you almost want to walk in and say, ha ha, good one, you got us, joke's on us. We couldn't figure out it was actually two systems with two sets of rules, even though it falls under one constitution. And the string, I guess, that connects them is Article 1. You know, that connects the Constitution generally to this administrative world under private contract law. So, ha-ha, joke's on us, you got us, but we're drawing a clear line in the sand instead of the get-them mentality. I think that's the same thing the founders were saying, and Jefferson specifically when he drafted the list of facts that were submitted to a candid world, as he said, and it was the laundry list. You know, here's the evidence for us to declare our independence from this nonsense, instead of, you know, the spirit of antagonism and confrontation. And that's exactly what I think you're doing, Don, is just pointing out the obvious fraud in the spirit of truth and light. And, you know, obviously I think that's, you know, mm-hmm. what you're doing, Greg. And to me, I love it. That's exciting. I think it's great.
You know, when we were kids, if I can just interject this, when we were kids and we were learning the pledge, and I quoted the last two-thirds of it, but
yeah.
it starts out, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. It wasn't, I pledge allegiance to the gold-fringed flag. And that's a distinction that a lot of people are unaware of. It's on the police patches. It's on military uniforms. It's on the flags hanging in the courts. You see it more and more, And you have two flags, don't you? They use one kind of flag in the schools and in certain public places. And they certainly don't sell the Chinese flags that we're buying with gold fringe on them. Do you, either of you want to comment on
that
duplicitous distinction?
May I?
Yes, please.
Greg, can I go first?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Chris.
There's a duplicity and a duality. It's interesting, that flag that hangs behind Congress on the wall of the congressional floor has no gold fringe, does it? Why is that? Yet, in every courtroom in the land, there is a gold fringe flag. Why is that? And like you said, you know, there are different flags. You know, the gold fringe around the officers' uniforms or the military's uniform. And now, even with the flag on the right shoulder with the Union on the wrong side, it's Union left. It's supposed to be Union right. I guarantee you that's not a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be on the right, not on the left. And there's a reason it's on the left.
This is a symbol. This is nothing more than a symbol. But look at the power that it exerts because of this administrative
system. And the reason for that, the reason for the gold, the reason that you won't find, and again, this gets to the heart of the discussion we're talking about, the reason that you won't find the gold on the flag in Congress is because it serves, Congress serves two masters, if you will. And if it's divided against itself, then it falls, which we see happening in this country. We are collapsing, even though Barack Obama says we're still the strongest, most powerful country in the world. And in fairness to Greg's remarks, when he said United States of America, he said God bless the United States of America, which of course includes the administrative world of which he is president, which he kept saying, United States, mm-hmm. United States. So he didn't necessarily... I'm validating what Greg said earlier. And anyway, Congress serves two roles, or two masters, if you will. Congress obviously is, you know, the duly constituted legislative branch, and also it serves the administrative world. Therefore, it does not have the administrative world's flag. The administrative world is governed by Roman civil law or the Admiralty, the Maritime and Admiralty system.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, that system carries that gold fringe, and everywhere you see that system, you see its gold fringed flag. This has been a compartmentalized discussion for so long. People walk into courtrooms with a piece of this puzzle, and they say something like, "You know, the that all capital letter name that you have there on your paperwork, Mr. Administrator or Judge or whatever you want to call him, that's not me. That's only a piece of the discussion. That gold fringe flag that you have on the wall there, you know, that represents whatever people say, and that's only a part of the discussion. Finally, what Greg and I have been talking about, going through, and it's a good time to plug the book, actually, going through USA the Republic is the House That No One Lives In by Lee Brobst. It's, you know, finally tying all these pieces together, understanding the duality of the system. I've never heard anybody say, yeah, it is one system under the Constitution, but really it's two. The administrative world has its own set of rules. It's a system that's born out of the Constitution. The founders knew this was a possibility, which is why all of those guys said things like, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. They knew if we took our eye off the ball for a second, this is where we'd wind up. And mm-hmm. these people manipulate and take advantage of our ignorance, not realizing that, you know, the administrative agency world, the fourth branch of government, as Congress called it,
mm-hmm.
is its own animal with its own set of rules. And for those who don't, you know, aren't sure if Congress or, you know, the Obama administration, if you will, or the Supreme Court and the judiciary in general know about this, I assure you they do. I know we'll run out of time. I won't go into that. But as we all know, they do. Anyway, the point is the administrative world is the world that is represented by that gold-fringed flag to address that issue specifically. So everywhere you see that, police officer, for example, officer of what? Officer of the corporation.
Now, are either of you gentlemen aware that we have a third flag? And I saw this in a piece that Henry Makow had published on Rents.com and probably on his website as well. The flag that Hillary Clinton used during her campaign. It was 25 or 30 feet long, hanging on a side wall, and they took a rear shot of the Clintons with Chelsea standing on the stage at the microphone. And it was a very surreal picture. People were mesmerized looking at her while she was speaking. And I couldn't help but notice that the stars on the flag were upside down, producing satanic horns with some symbolic of that. Now, what country do you think that flag was made in?
Real interesting. You know, that might have been, and it was Union Right. You know, so it wasn't flipped around or turned around or anything. And, you know, for some people that are listening that might say, well, you know, maybe somebody photoshopped that, because I know you're the master of that discussion, Don, like we were talking about earlier. It was on Hillary's campaign website.
Yeah.
Was it, was somewhere in the Northeast, was it Connecticut or Vermont? I think it was Vermont that happened.
Yeah.
It was on her campaign website. And the picture was huge, and it stayed up during the whole entire discussion of that. And
There was more in the picture than in the collage of photos. They had a close up of a sort of like a pin that looked almost like a brooch pinned to Bill Clinton's tuxedo, and he had it had the Eye of Horus in the center of it.
Yeah,
and Chelsea was wearing a necklace with an upside down cross. Now, what does that mean? Well, that's obviously those are all satanic symbols, or you know, satanic use of what would be considered sacred by most people, other than the Eye of Horus. That's the all-seeing eye for those out there.
There's definitely their own version of the occult that plays a role here. But let's get back. Can I throw something else back at a flag for a moment?
Sure.
There's a civil flag, and believe it or not, the civil flag was still supposed to have the same proportions of 1.9 by 1, I believe. It might have been 1.75 by 1. But it had the stripes going vertical versus horizontal. And I believe that was eliminated. Now, that was there until the 30s, and I believe it was 33 when this gold was removed, took our law away. And I believe that's when that flag disappeared, meaning this, that under the democracy, we're in a perpetual state of war. That's why the other flag with the horizontal stripes is a war flag, believe it or not. Betsy Ross was creating a flag to go to war against Britain with. But the peace flag was supposed to be vertical stripes, meaning...
Correct.
That those of us, because we've all been brought into the democracy through the draft and through everything else, added our say and our blood to this insanity of war. But we've been in a perpetual state of war, so we have war on crime, war on terror, war on drugs. You know, all these war, which everybody's talked about, is symbolized by those flags. So myself personally, I know that the true military flag or the true flag, you know, the country is a 1.9 by 1 ratio with the stars with the point of going up, not obviously with the 2 points at the top. But, again, I still think if we go back to the Republic, we're going to want to go back to the Republic flag in peace to the world, which is going to be that civil flag. And, again, I'm not an expert on that. I've just done a little bit of research on that. But I think if we're going to bring this message of peace, even in this insane democracy, we might want to reintroduce that flag, even in our own circles, to show our example of being under the Republic. I know a lot of guys will walk into court and take a 1.9 by 1 flag in with no fringe and properly signified and wear it on the lapel thinking it means something. And I'm not quite sure it does. I think what we're going to have to do is do a little bit more research and get back to that civilian flag, the peace flag under the Republic. If that's real, like I said, I'm not going to say one way or the other if I'm accurate on that. I know there's something missing in the discussion, a Of course, none of us were around in 1933. So.
Yeah, you may be very right with that. I'm not saying you're not. I'm just alluding to the fact that, to me, you want to talk about a sacrilege. that trick that they played with the flag, even if somebody photoshopped that, if that was on Hillary Clinton's website, it certainly shows how much her people care about it.
Right.
And you brought up a very valid point that I've discussed. If you change the word on in those phrases that you used, war on drugs, war on terror, change the word on to mean under the influence of. And you really see the duplicity in the statement.
Like we would use the phrase on steroids, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or the war on poverty. It's the war under the influence of poverty, the war under the influence of drugs, the war under the influence of terror, because this is perpetual. They've perpetuated this throughout the history of the Earth for at least the last 13,000 years. And this is nothing new, but it's something new for a new generation. Now, if you look at what's going on in Gaza right now, Israel is committing the very type of genocide that the wannabes claim they suffered during World War II.
Exactly.
And that's hypocrisy if I've ever seen it before.
Well,
and it's horrific because they're using every type of technology that they didn't have back then. Killing is killing. It doesn't matter what you use. But you're talking about this being a civilized world?
No.
This is madness. This is chaos, insanity, and evil.
And religion has supported it. You know, if you run around and call one group of people special, and yet Jesus Christ himself, out of John chapter 17 and other places, showed that he and the Father are one in John 10, and in John 17 he's showing that we're all to be one. And how can you have all one when a certain group of people have put themselves up as being the highest order over everybody else? And literally, I mean, I hate to say this, this is the fact, the democracy in the United States, this democracy, this municipal corporation, I believe, which is really probably owned by the Middle Temple of the Crown out of England, and then obviously under contract with the Vatican, through the 1213 treaty with King John I, which puts the King of England as the most potent prince and arch treasurer of the Holy Roman Empire. That's included in our 1782 Treaty of Paris and Treaty of Peace as part of his description, the King George III at the time. So that contract was still valid in 1782. It's obviously still valid today under Queen Elizabeth II. That being said, they've orchestrated a world that, one way or the other, because of our ignorance and because of our religious bigotry and our refusal to actually follow the true words of Christ, has led us to this disaster. I can say what I'm going to say. I went to seminary, okay? So I can say this. Doctrines that came out of the Nicene Council are virtually all bogus because none of them actually contain the thoughts of the words that we actually have in the four Gospels of Jesus Christ. If we took the words of Jesus Christ, which we've concluded tonight, are what really runs the Republic, which is love your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, love your neighbors yourself, love your enemies, or as Chris summed it up in the Royal Law of Love there in Matthew chapter 7, and again as James calls it in James 2:8, there's really, if we live our lives according to that requirement, there's nothing you can do wrong, because everything I would do is because I have love for other people. And it's like when you meet a man or a woman from another religion, a Muslim or even a somebody who's supposed to be your enemy, you know, maybe a communist Chinese or something, God forbid, or maybe even a communist Cuban. I don't think those really exist. But anyways, you look at man in the eyes, and if there's a soul and a spirit of life in that man or woman, all of a sudden all the differences disappear when you see, you know, you look in the eyes are the window of the soul. So I think that if we take Jesus' message as opposed to the doctrines that came out of religion, we could all go to the Republic worldwide because love was the only answer. And it's not just the stupid, ridiculous word love that we have in the English language. You know, it ties in agape, which is the unconditional, charitable love. And it ties in phileo, the brotherly love we get Philadelphia from. And it ties in the eros love, the passionate love, because passion doesn't just mean sex. It's passion. you know, anyway, the bottom line is it's life. Love is life. And this hatred and this darkness that this other side is projecting through one group being superior to the other is justifying the slaughter of others is really just going to perpetuate this problem forever. And there's only one way out. Stop playing the game. This line in the movie, there's only one way to win, it's not to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
There's only way to do it is not to play. And that's why if we all find the Republic, like, for example, I also worked in the financial world, and I believe that there's a way to win this thing financially. If nobody were to sign another loan at a Bank of America or Wells Fargo or J.P. Morgan Chase or Washington Mutual, which was taken over, or Citigroup Bank or whatever, any bank out there, if nobody went in there and created a new loan, which is creating money out of thin air, as Chris and I know, this thing would collapse within 30 to 60 days. If everybody stopped, went to their employers and went exempt, this thing would collapse in 30 to 60 days. It would be over.
Well, they make the money out of thin air, don't they? So when it comes time for us to kick in our what is they're telling us is 30 grand a person, it's probably 300,000 a person. I'm going to take in a mason jar with a lot of air in it.
That's right, because only a democracy citizen or subject, only a citizen of the United States, of the municipal corporation, of the District of Columbia, an administrative democracy and its franchises, is obligated to that debt. A sovereign of the Republic isn't obligated for anything, meaning this. If everybody would opt out, the only ones left with the responsibility of paying that debt would be the 10,000 Illuminists or the people that run their local governments that have joined in at the high levels of Freemasonry. Let them be responsible. Hell,
yeah,
the Chinese...
Hey, under their own laws, Greg, we did not get a copy of that contract, did we?
No.
Did
we're
you
not
get page one?
That's right, Don. I don't believe we're bound to it. That's why I believe that what we've discovered and what we're having discussion tonight is literally the opportunity for mankind to be free of this slave mindset and literally fulfill the message that Jesus Christ came to give. Now, I know I'm a heretic to people in religion, so I might as well continue that one last thought here. When Jesus talked about sin and he talked about debt...
Go on with your heretic self. No, go ahead.
Well, you know,
get
Jesus
down,
Christ,
get down with Jesus your heretic Christ. Self. Go ahead.
Well, Jesus Christ would be considered a heretic today because his use of the word sin is not as the church teaches. It means to miss the mark. In essence, it's an archery term, which means to miss the mark and not receive the prize. Unfortunately, Strong got that last part wrong. He should have added the other word inheritance. So literally is hamartano, which is to miss the mark and not receive the prize or to receive the inheritance. And the word in the Greek is a letter A with an apostrophe curling to the left as opposed to the right, which gives the H sound. So if you literally were to look at the word, there's no H, it's just an A. And of course, when you put the letter A in a Greek word, at the beginning of the word, it takes the rest of the word and makes it a negative. So the root word is literally to receive an inheritance. Put an A in front of it, it's to not receive an inheritance. But what Christ said was that... If we love one another, then we are in essence heirs. In Romans, quote Romans chapter 8, which is a linking back to Romans to John chapter 10 and also to others of the gospel. It literally shows that Jesus was adopted. Jesus is heir of all in Hebrews 1 verse 2. He's heir, and then he says in John 10 that he's the Son of God. Well, but Paul writes in Romans chapter 8 that us, are sons of God, adopted as sons, heirs of God, and joint heirs with Christ. Same words, son of God, sons of God, as son of God in John chapter 10. Now, unfortunately, religion has taken and created this aura, this mystique, and saying that, well, it, these things can only apply to Jesus, they don't apply to us. What I'm saying is that our positions, if we want to live under the love of Christ that he presented us, which these founding fathers gave us the opportunity in the law to live that way without binding contracts to a federalized government, which is nothing more than a feudalized government, is there for us to do. And all it takes is for us to literally begin to love each other, to come out of the commercial world of destroying each other, and so to stop playing games, to stop following. Basically what's happened in America, Don and Chris, is we're following the Talmud. Literally, word for word.
This concept of competition, which is driven by the corporate world as well as the military industrial complex and the banks, is what divides and conquers us.
Exactly.
This to be successful is a measure of what you are worth to the central bankers, what you are worth to the IRS, what you are worth to replenish the coffers of the Federal Reserve, which all goes overseas anyway.
Yeah.
Just ask Donald Trump. He's got more debt than anybody else, yet he's considered the richest man. I think his casinos are about ready to collapse, right? His hotels and casinos in Atlantic City are about ready to all collapse. So economically,
were they hit by an airplane or a hologram?
I think, yes. Yes, touche.
You get the idea. Okay.
I get it.
Listen, gentlemen, we're out of time. I want to give each one of you a closing remark, and I want to thank Chris before we do that for bringing you on, Greg. I'd like to have you come back either with Chris or alone. It's up to you. I enjoyed this, and, of course, I enjoy having Chris on, too.
Absolutely. I'm honored either way, Don. However you want it, with Chris or without it. Be happy to do it. I really appreciate the opportunity to share my views and get other people to be able to get some dialogue going on them.
Mm-hmm. We've got some ideas, so we have to get in touch because there are some people coming together across this land and even overseas that are wanting to help. They're wanting to participate in this process because they realize the significance of America. If America stands, they can change their situation. If America falls, we all fall. And I'm speaking about the people, not the corporation.
And that's all that matters, yep. Is the people.
Yes. We are the people.
Yep.
Either one, would you like to make a closing remark?
Chris?
I'll go first. We'll save the best for last. I just want to say it's always an honor. Man, I'm... Greg's led some, I guess you could call them workshops for the last couple of Saturdays on the subject matter that we're going through lately on my show, which again is drawn from USA The Republic is the House That No One Lives In by Lee Probst. You can find it at usa-the-republic.com. And I would say I agree with Greg, you know, on the issues of, I guess the issues of law, matters of law, and, you know, relating to that subject matter and even politics, if I could say broadly, he's mandated that folks in our local area that want to talk about any of that subject matter read USA The Republic is a House That No One Lives In first, because all the questions that are being asked and the issues that are being raised by these people, even on the mainstream news, are addressed there specifically, and I would agree with them. So, anyway, at those workshops, I said at the last one after it that I was deeply honored, basically, to be a part of the discussion and to know them. And I would say the same thing to both of you guys. I think it's an honor. It really is an honor and a privilege and a pleasure. I think that what's going on here is unique. I don't think it's happening widely, so thank you to both of you.
Well, I'm thank you to you for coming on the show,
yeah.
And we're going to have you on again. We have to keep doing this. This is great radio going on two networks. It would be nice if we could simulcast the show on both networks.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah, it would.
But we know a lot of the listeners came over tonight, so.
Yep.
That's right. Well, you know, gentlemen, can I maybe use a couple comments here? I think that we, you know, what sets us apart, Don and Chris and others like us, is that we most definitely aren't in it for the money.
Listeners know that.
that is a fact. So I must say that this has been a movement that's been building for me my entire life, from the days that I challenged the basic teachings of the Greek Orthodox Church when I was a little kid, and to challenging the Protestant Church as an adult. I know that men like us have been called to this, and we come to it with different strengths. And what we're to do is to bring those strengths together and to teach those that are awakening. And, you know, so I think what's happening here is this truth is coming out regardless of the vaccine poisoning and the food poisoning and the chemtrails and all the other things that have happened. These truths, the creator of the universe is bringing out regardless of all the things that the dark side has tried to get to stop this awakening or this enlightenment from happening. And I just thankful that I get to play a role and I get to know men like you guys. So it's been really great.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you to say that, and I'm sure the listening audience appreciates you having been on tonight. And I'm going to ask you guys to stay on the line, if you will, but we are going to say goodnight to our listening audience, and I hope to have you both on again soon.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Okay, you're more than welcome. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our guest, Chris Hinckley, and our surprise guest, no longer a surprise, Mr. Greg Pappas. Greg will come back again. You heard it yourself. We'd like to especially thank Don and Doug Newsom for making not only BBS Radio but Evident Footprints possible. Please support BBS if you can. We're encouraging you to sign up for subscriptions to all the archives at BBS Radio, many fine shows, and you keep us on the air and you help us pay for the bandwidth that's used when you are downloading the shows. It's a good way to reciprocate. When you do things like that, and it's not about the money so much as it is, someone has to pay for it, and it's you're being given a lot of valuable information on these shows, as you can hear from the guests I had on this show tonight, as well as many other shows. And this is going on all day on multiple streams on this network. And someone has to pay for that bandwidth. It's a good way to do the right thing, and we're doing the opposite of what's being done to us when you do that. Think about that. Do unto others. With that, and I don't mean to preach, with that, we also want to say a special thank you to Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, the listening audience, for tuning in, as you do every Monday through Friday. I look forward to seeing you all tomorrow night with another great show. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.